You are listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
You are? Yes, you are listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network. A History of the Caribbean in 100 Objects has been partnering with the Archaeology Podcast Network, which you can find at archaeologypodcastnetwork.com. And we are partnering because in this way we can bring this show to an even bigger audience. So that's all that's going to change. This little clip in the beginning, little clip at the end of the show. So don't worry, for the rest it's all the same object history goodness. So without further ado, this is this week's episode of A History of the Caribbean in 100 Objects.
This is a podcast about the rich history of the cultures and societies of the Caribbean, told through objects from the earliest period to modern times. I'm Alice Sampson. I'm a Caribbean archaeologist and a lecturer in archaeology at the University of Leicester.
And I am Angus Moore. I'm also a Caribbean archaeologist and I'm a postdoctoral fellow at Stanford University.
And we are still in our very special episodes that are recorded at the SAA. This is another episode of Alice and Angus Interview an Archaeologist. And who are we interviewing today, Alice?
Well, today in this episode, we have another very special guest, Dr. Jorge Ulloa, who's an archaeologist and a researcher at the Museo del Hombre Dominicano in Dominican Republic. And he's also a lecturer in anthropology and history at the Instituto Tecnológico de Santo Domingo, or the Technological Institute of Santo Domingo. And he is also a postdoctoral researcher at Leiden University in the Netherlands, which is where we know Jorge from, actually, because Jorge is a very good friend of ours. And he did his PhD at Leiden, which is where both Angus and I got to know him. And we spent many wonderful times researching with him in the Caribbean, in both Cuba and Dominican Republic.
True.
Yeah, so nice of you to be here, Jorge. And of course, with a person with so many different functions and jobs and titles, we cannot just talk about one object. We have to talk about multiple objects. So today, we're going to in fact be talking about two figurines from Cuba. The figurines are, and help me if I don't pronounce them correctly, Taguabo and Maicabo. Right, Jorge?
Taguabo and Maicabo.
All right, there you go. So don't listen to my pronunciation. Listen to Jorge here. Mm-hmm. He's the one you should be following. So Jorge, what do these figurines look like? Taguabo and Maicabo, what do they look like?
Well, it's interesting because Taguabo is a figurine of wood object. It's large. It's like more or less like 80 centimeters large. And this is anthropomorphic with, you know, in stand figure with the eyes is like holes, and the arm is near to the body, and it's very
standing very straight.
Standing,
eh?
Exactly, figure. And my cabo is another figurine, is stone figurine. It's less high to Taguabo, but have really like the form of the cone, the conic form, and at the same time is a little bit anthropomorphic face.
All right, so it's a stone cone with a face on top
with
of
the
it.
Face.
So these objects look very different. One is wood, one is stone. They have very different forms. Why are we talking about these two different objects at the same time? How are they linked together?
Well, interesting question. Because two objects was found in the same place, and they have really special means for the one community in the northeastern of Cuba. They find in the Cueva de Hawaii in Antilla, in Holguín, in the northeastern of Cuba, and they was really important object for the community in the past, especially for the raining and the dry season.
So just for our non-Spanish speaking listeners, you said they were found in La Cueva de Hawaii, which, and a cueva is a cave, right?
A cave, yeah, it was finally a cave. And I think the special for this object was the day they was finding in 1928, the first one, Taguabo. The second was finding in 1929 was this for the first the same person.
So the same person found the same them person, in yeah. two different years.
Exactly.
So he knew where to dig.
And a special day, the 8th of September, the day of Virgen de la Caridad del Cobre. This is the most important religious icon for the Cuban people.
Right. And it's also a very important religious day.
Exactly.
Then. So they were found on the same day, just 1 year apart.
Exactly.
How did that happen?
Well, it's interesting story because the finding was made for a person. They received, or she received a revelation of in the dreams about the presence of the object in the cave. Interesting scene, this person was a devote for the Virgen de la Caridad del Cobre. She was a mother of one guy. The guy was, he have affection to the archaeology. He collect object. He have a small room with object and a small museum in his community in these years. And his mother was very devout for the popular religion. And at the same time, he was devout of the popular religion. And his mother received in trance, you know, during the trance, the revelation to the presence of the idols and the cave, the same day in different years.
Wow. Okay. So the mother of the guy who found these figurines had a dream or was in a trance and received
the revelation.
The revelation that
mm-hmm.
he should go to a cave and what dig and find something.
And find the object. And interesting thing, the cave at the same time is have archaeological remains. Have archaeological remains. They have, and in the cave you can find a later they find a burials, two burials.
Ah, so it was already known that this was a special cave where indigenous burials had been found in the past, and people had done research before.
Yeah, and at the same time he created stories behind the object and the burials, because they say the object was, you know, was used for the Taínos or for the indigenous people, and during the occupation or during the European arrival to the Caribbean, they go to the cave and put the object to preserve to the Spaniard.
Ah, right. So these figurines were possibly hidden by the indigenous people when Europeans came
exactly.
to protect them from.
Exactly. This is the idea or the stories behind or part of the findings of the object.
Right. That's interesting, Alice, because I see a sort of a common thread here in our SAA interviews, because we were talking to Todd Allman, not just now, but for our listeners, maybe a week ago, and he talked about a secret hiding spot as well, in which they enslaved people of St. Kitts were hiding away coins. But now you're telling us that this practice already went back to the very first encounters between the indigenous people of Cuba and the Europeans. Yeah, that's very cool. So they were there from early colonial times until 1929. Wow.
Yeah. Other interesting thing is the confluence of three factors in these kind of things. The first is the people to find the object was very devout for the popular religion. The second is in the community, you have a long season of dry, no raining. And the people on some occasion, you know, have suffered a really, really long dry season. And the third, the guy to find the object was efficient to archaeology. He created a special group for aficionados or amateurs people to collect object, archaeological object in that region. And three factors combined. He find the object, he put in his collection, and at the same time, when he entered with the object, or one of the objects, Tawawa was the first in the city, raining.
This is very interesting.
Raining. But the people, you know, pray all the time for raining, because for the really long dry season. And when his mother received the revelation, the revelation was, go to the cave, you can find the object, and when the object enter at the city, the raining begin.
Wow, and this and also links back to pre-Columbian Taíno practices about cosmology, certain Zemis. Ambition. And about the link between certain Zemis and the rain, right?
Yeah, exactly. And what's raining, at this moment, the people thinking, well, you know, the figurine produced the raining and they start the veneration of the figurine. And according to the records, during the dry seasons, when the people want to the raining, the people go for all the city with the figurine in procession to claim the raining.
Oh wow, that's fantastic! So the finder found Taguabo and Maikabo, brought them out of the cave, and where did they end up? Were they put in a local church or kept in someone's house?
No, really. It was the person to find the object, he had in his house. No, it was really official.
There wasn't
official church. He has in the house, and of course, when the people want to raining, talk with him, and he used the imagine or the figurine to go into the local procession with the people to follow this kind of belief.
Okay, so yeah, like a procession, like you would normally have with Catholic saints, saintly statues, and they would carry these.
And the people pray. The people pray to ask the imagine, like in Catholic vision, you know, pray over the neck. Yeah, it's like interesting syncretism between Catholic, maybe Catholic or Christian, and indigenous belief.
Right, because you called this a popular religion. And of course, Catholicism is a popular religion in Cuba as well, but this is not Catholicism. This is, what's the
syncretism.
Name? Syncretism. So it doesn't really have a name, this particular sets of beliefs or?
Well, syncretism is, you have many forms to explain, but it's like Santeria, for example. When you have, for example, the imagine of Catholic saint, but behind the mean is really African's elements or African means.
So it's a bit like voodoo in that respect as
more
well,
or less,
where Taíno objects are used by voodoo practitioners today.
And the other interesting thing for this idol is Taguabo was for the rain and Maikabo was for the dry.
Oh.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, was for the dry because the according to the records, according to the tradition, when there was raining a lot and they need to stop the raining, they make a veneration to Maikabo.
Do we know whether they actually worked? Did this actually happen?
Not really. The tradition was finished at the final of the 50s of 20th century in Cuba. Today, the figure is in the local museum in Antilla. But other interesting thing is the stories of this figure continue because was record for in the 40s for the historians. In the 80s was recreated for important archaeologist José Manuel Guars of Holguín, and more recently was recreated again for another two researchers, Ángela Obregón and Caridad Rodríguez. He writing about the stories and he writing about the icons because when the icon was delivered or was give a donation to the authorities, to the museum, they received a restoration, you know, for a nice condition to exhibition or whatever. Yeah.
Jorge, when I look at Taguabo, this figurine reminds me quite a lot of another quite famous figurine from Jamaica, also found in a cave, which archaeologists refer to as Jamaican standing man, right, which is now in the British Museum.
Yeah.
Taguabo looks a little bit like this figure.
True. Look like this figurine from Jamaica. And Taguabo is not the unique, but was for a long time was more or less the unique wolf finding in Cuba. Of course, after Buchillones, you have a lot. But
right,
before
yeah, so
Buchillones was, you know.
Yeah, Buchillones is a very famous Cuban site, which we'll probably talk about in the future at some point, where it's a waterlogged site and there were many wooden objects found there. But when these objects, when Taguabo was found, this was one of the very first
wooden objects in Cuba.
The other interesting thing is that Alejandro Reyes Atencio, the person to find the object, he imagined or building the story behind the find it and behind the veneration. You know, to try to feel or to create a belief story behind the find of the object. And he say the object, you know, his inspiration was more in the ideas of the chronicles about the how the semi appear, how the semi, you know, called the person. And he said the object was a property in the past of one cacique, and he created this story about the, you know, the marriage of one cacique with another person. He used toponyms of Cuba, indigenous toponyms with the indigenous name, and he used many names of indigenous tradition today,
okay,
in Cuba. To build in the story behind the idols.
Yes, yes. We've already talked on the show a lot about Frère Montpanet and how he describes the goings on with Zemi objects in Hispaniola, right?
Yeah.
And so this is a Cuban story variant of it, that it's not written down when these people were in fact worshipping these objects, but it was written down or told much, much later in the 20th century.
The interesting thing is the person to find the object, he has experience to reading in archaeology because he has a vision and he read a lot, or more or less some historical record, and maybe right. he imagined the stories, you know,
inspired.
Behind, it's like inspired in the imagining. And he created all the stories behind the figurine, the burials, the cave, and the indigenous tradition.
Right. So you say create the story all the time.
Well,
so
that means
you don't believe this is a true story, right? Or do you think there's maybe some truth to it? You know, if you go to the museum right now where they're kept and we pray to these idols, what's going to happen?
I think behind all the story, you have really something belief. Something belief. When I say something belief, you're thinking, or you can see really how the people thinking, how the people, you know, evaluate his tradition about the indigenous presence today in some part of Cuba, and how the people imagine his ancestor. I think this is to imagine the story, to believe the story, but at the same time, to recreate the connection with the ancestor.
Yeah, and in that respect, it's great that these two very important figurines are in a local museum in Cuba, and people can still go and visit them and ask for the rain to start or stop. In fact, we need one of those in England. I need to. Yeah.
Can you imagine you have the figurine in Holland, it's raining, snow. I say, please stop.
Right.
Stop the raining.
Stop it now.
Stop the snow.
when you were studying in the Netherlands, I'm sure that you would like to have these two as your friends with
Maybe
you.
Maybe I need a Tawao. Or Micah Bo.
Oh, probably yeah, more than the
to stock the raining and the snow.
Yeah, for sure. And in fact, where I'm right now at Stanford, it's also very dry. So I'm guessing, you know, if they could, you know, loan Tacuabo, they'd probably be very, very happy with that too. So you said earlier that around the 50s, they stopped doing these syncretic rituals with these objects. Why did they stop at some point?
Well, I think it was, you know, a social transformation in Cuba after the revolution. They tried to create the imagine of, you know, not really any religion, any belief, you know, superstition. It was a vision of superstition. And the owner of the object, you know, saved the object in his house. It's the second save. The first save was for the Spaniard, according to his story. The second was he saved the imagine in his house. And finally, in the 70s, he gave the object to the local museum for the restoration and whatever. But the tradition was down, maybe the social transformation, maybe at the same time, the small village receive water supply for other another four. They no need more to, you know, to pray for the special icon to raining. But at the end, the tradition was down, 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 and finally disappear. Disappear at the end of the 50s. Yeah. Anyway, the Alejandro Reyes Atencio, the person to, the most important person in the story, I think he died at the end of the 70s. And he gave the, his testimony for many persons about the, his story, about his, the pressing of the object, how he find the object, the story behind was interesting because I say you before, some research used this information to recreate the story about the semillas in Cuba.
Well, okay. Thank you so much for talking to us today.
No, thank you for the invitation to talk about the, this really interesting story about the presence of the indigenous object in the popular religion today in Cuba.
Right. Often when we talk about Cuba, we talk about the idea of ethnogenesis, right? Which is a very important term there by a Cuban anthropologist, coined by a Cuban anthropologist called Ortiz.
Fernando Ortiz.
Fernando, yeah. Transculturation.
Transculturation terminology.
And this is, of course, a lovely example of one of these objects that is...
Exactly.
An object of transculturation, and it's growing with Cuba's history through the decades and still growing now in its local museum.
That's true.
Very nice story. Thank you for sharing that story with us and with our listeners. I guess that wraps up this, once again, very special episode of Alice and Angus Interview an Archaeologist. Anything else we want to say, Alice?
I think we've had a great chat with Jorge about these wonderful objects. So please give us feedback if you enjoyed the show or if you didn't. And we're not really newbies now on the podcast scene. We're kind of middle-aged on the podcast scene, but that doesn't mean that we can't use tips for improvement and we wouldn't like your feedback because we would like your feedback very much. So please consider giving us a rating on iTunes. And most importantly, please share this podcast with your friends and family.
And you can also reach out to us if you are from the Caribbean or you have relations from the Caribbean and you have an object that you think is interesting to talk about. We can, you know, we can promise that we'll fly over to you, but nowadays there's things like Skype or other ways of getting in touch, and we would love to talk to you. We, you know, Alice and I love to talk to each other about objects, but it's for us, it's also very nice to hear these stories that we've never heard before, like today with Jorge. If you want to talk to us, you can find us on Twitter at Shores of Time. You can also find us and contact us through our website, shoresoftime.com. So for now, all I can say is... thank you so much for listening to this very special episode of History of the Caribbean in 100 Objects, where we discuss two lovely figurines from Cuba. And of course, rain or shine, it's always very important to remember what the great Bob Marley said. In this great future, you can't forget your past. So we're talking to Marlena Ansack. Hi, Marlena.
Hi, hello, how are you?
Did you know that we are, Alice and I, we're doing a podcast. This is a podcast called A History of the Caribbean in 100 Objects.
No, I didn't know it.
So a podcast is kind of an internet radio thing. And what we're doing is we talk about Caribbean objects and we talk about the larger histories that are connected to them. And we normally take a lot of time to talk to Caribbean archaeologists about this, but we're doing sort of an on-the-fly session. And we have a very simple yet difficult question for you. What is your most favorite object in the whole of the Caribbean?
It must be one.
We're being very strict.
So the thing is with you, I know you've done a lot of excavation on Los Roques. And Los Roques are also Caribbean islands, but they're off the coast of Venezuela.
And there's a lot of lovely, lovely artifacts coming from there.
Well, I think, and I, between all our figurines, we have like 400 figurines only from tiny Dos Mosquises Island.
Wow.
And many anthropozoomorphic vessels. And I think I have, if I have to decide which figurine is my favorite, probably I have one. Well, I don't have one, but I may think about one which is
it's
very
like, it's
special.
It's like almost
yes,
like choosing
yes.
between your kids.
Yes, of course. Of course, this is like this. Yeah, this one is very atypical, I will say, the Sil Valenciennes figurine. But the atypical because the figurine holding in her hands kind of stems, you know. We decide,
body stems.
Body stems. We decide that this is body stems, pintadera.
Mm-hmm.
And this is very strange. This is a unique figurine from Valenciennes stuff, either on my land or on the island, with this kind of object on hands.
Very
you know?
Cool.
So this is, and there is something more about this figurine. The figurine has kind of painted decoration. This is incision, which when you see the stamp, you can say that it is like about the body painting.
That is really interesting because, you know, one of the objects we've talked about in an earlier podcast was a body stamp from Dominican Republic. So I didn't know about
from
this figurine.
From a site that has excavated.
Yeah, yeah.
And we probably should have talked to you about this as
we
well.
We should have talked to you about it. It's really fascinating that this figurine had, was holding a couple of body stamps.
This is a unique figurine like this, no? So certainly is very unique. Found, excavated, recovered on Dos Mosquises site in one of the trenches, very well documented with the archaeological context. So we can talk about this. Oh, by the way, it is published in our book, Los Ídolos de las Islas Prometidas.
Which,
no? So
for those people who do not know this book, which may be a couple of them, is probably the most beautiful book ever published in archaeology. Have you ever seen a copy of that, Alice?
I have seen a copy of it. It's got some amazing, amazing images in it.
It is, yeah. Yeah, if you can ever get your hands on a copy, do it, because this is going to be one of those collector's items. I mean, it's going to be an artifact for the ages itself, this book, with a lot of artifacts in it as well, among which this particular figurine as well.
Yes, it is, of course. The figurine is, the book is mainly about figurines. It is not in the title, but we are, all the book is about making sense of the figurines in Los Roques. And I also, the book is in Spanish. Unfortunately for the English speakers, it's in Spanish. However, I'm still waiting for the people who can challenge my methodology for it is integrative method for studying figurines. And I'm still waiting for the people who can challenge.
I would not dare to challenge your methodology because you are in command of those figurines. You are the mother of all the figurines. You know what, Alice? I'm listening to this and I'm thinking another podcast episode that we need to go into this in much more depth. But thank you for now, Marlena.
Oh, it is my pleasure.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Yeah, it is a very good idea. Yeah. Nice.
Oh, thank you
brilliant.
For that.
That means we can come back to you and talk to you another time at more length.
We would love to talk to you more about maybe not even this object, but any of the lovely objects that you are excavated there at Los Roques.
Good.
Thanks so much.
And enjoy the rest of the conference.
Yeah, hello, Konrad.
Hello. Hello.
We just spoke to your mother, in fact. You are a family of archaeologists.
Yes, indeed.
So we're talking to Konrad Ansak here. Hello. You are doing a PhD currently at the Department of Anthropology of the College of William & Mary.
Yes.
So you're a budding Caribbean archaeologist, but that would be kind of selling you short because you've been doing this for a long, long time already, right?
I have, yeah. I've been blessed to actually be, I think, probably I was like a year and a half old when I went on my first excavation, you know, not consciously, but yeah, I would bug my parents, you know, around the excavation pits with playing with toy cars and such. So.
So you probably in those times you must have seen a lot of very, very cool objects. And Alice and I were doing a podcast called The History of the Caribbean in 100 Objects.
Okay.
And we're not really sticking to 100 objects because we know that there's so many, many super cool stuff to talk about in the Caribbean.
Yes.
But we are going around this lobby right now, asking all the Caribbean archaeologists that we can find, one simple yet difficult question. What is your most favorite object in the Caribbean? Can be anything. Can be anything modern. From you could say, you know, I really like that particular figurine that I bought at a tourist market.
Yes.
Or it could be something that's as ancient as anything you would find in one of your excavations.
Oh, I like the question. It's a difficult question. But I think, yeah, off the top of my head, I think I already have a favorite object.
Go on.
It's a naval boarding cutlass that we found on the island of La Tortuga. And we were doing, actually, because the site of Punta Salinas on La Tortuga is it's a colonial site, and it's very large. So we were doing metal detector transects. And in one of them, we found first, so the metal detector sounds, and you know, we take the GPS position, and we start to dig a little test pit around where it sounded, and first we see, you know, this kind of round metal iron corroded thing, and soon enough it was actually the handle of the cutlass.
Wow.
We left it in situ. And I started digging deeper and opened it up into a one by one. And it was diagonally just placed in the sand, completely whole, in the middle of nowhere. I mean, this was sheer white sand, and it was just stabbed diagonally in the sand.
Any idea what it was doing there?
Not really. It seems like somebody must have hidden it. Because it was, so the very end of the sword, the pommel, was actually like 10 centimeters under the surface.
Okay. Yeah. That's,
so that and the diagonal positioning probably indicates that somebody just, you know, jabbed it into the sand, made a little hole around it, and then stuck it further. For some reason, they hit it.
Right. You must have fantasized about all the like particular scenarios that caused it to end up there.
Yes. You know, pirates floated into my head, and you know, Blackbeard. And
yeah, for sure.
Who knows? You know.
Did you dig maybe, a little? Sorry. Go ahead, Alice.
No, I'm getting carried away now too. I'm just thinking of like. Yeah, some privateer landing up on Tortuga, throwing away his sword and thinking, damn it, I'm just going to live here.
Or did you dig a little bit deeper and check to see if there was, in fact, a treasure beneath the saber?
You know, that thought always haunted me.
Yeah.
And that thought always haunted me. We carefully checked with the metal detector around. We actually extended the hole to like a 2x2. The pit, but there was nothing there.
There
it was
go.
Just a.
That's as thorough as you can be if you're finding one cutlass in the middle of a desert island.
That was my favorite.
All right, I can kind of see, you know, if that would be my favorite. It kind of is my new favorite object in the Caribbean. Very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah, thank you, Conrad. That's a great object.
All right, thanks. I think we're gonna try and complete the family.
Oh, yeah, okay. Oh, what, are we going to go for Dad?
I guess we're going to go for Dad. We're going to go for Andrzej. Hello, Andrzej. So we are trying to complete the family ride here. We have another very, very famous and of a big stature, because we're talking to a very tall guy here, Andrzej Ancak. Andrzej, we've already been talking to your family, asking them a very simple yet difficult question.
Yeah.
What is your favorite object in the Caribbean?
Wow.
Yeah.
Whoa. Let me think for a while. Well, it's a surprise. Just thinking for a while. Well, there are several.
Oh, no,
but
you have the big one. You have the big one.
You want
one.
Only one.
Only
yeah,
one.
You want only one. Well, well, of course, I'm not going to talk about figurines.
No, that's already been talked about.
Yeah, because there are so many pretty nice, beautiful figurines, of course, from our aesthetic point of view. No?
Sure.
But, well, there are some very interesting, very intriguing objects in imagery from Venezuela. There are actually several of them. But perhaps I would say that I really like very much what we call the anthropomorphic vessel, which is actually the personification or anthropomorphization of a bat, and at the same time of at least what we think is, and at the same time a personification or humanization or anthropomorphization of bat and crocodile.
A bat and a crocodile combined.
Yeah.
That's a weird hybrid.
Absolutely incredible hybrid because it is a standing being. Mm-hmm. Standing on two legs and has kind of wings as a bat has a snout as a crocodile has, and all the rest is anthropomorphized.
Wow.
That is a cool object.
Where's this from?
You can imagine it's from Los Roques.
Of course. Okay. We should have known.
Because it is but actually there is another one. But you're thinking about only one, so don't worry.
Should we let him have two?
No. Let's talk about the other one at some future episode of History of the Caribbean.
The second one is actually Walter Raleigh, human person without head, with the face on his chest.
Ooh!
It's another anthropomorphic vessel.
Like you would see in medieval iconography.
Absolutely. So it is standing on two legs, and everything else is a big belly head at the same time. Everything is in this belly and head, which is one thing.
Wow.
So it is also something absolutely unique. And the first time when we found it, immediately we thought about Waterlay, you know?
His
image of this.
So I'm guessing this is also from Los Roques?
Yeah, it is also from Los
Roques. All right. We should have known, of course, because this is, people that don't know about Los Roques, go look for it on the internet, go look for that book, although it's pretty hard to find because it is probably one of the most amazing sites in the Caribbean. Thank you so much for talking
You're
to
welcome.
Us, Andres.
Yeah, thank you, Andres.
This podcast is part of the Creative Commons under the Attribution Share Alike 4.0 International License, and it was made possible thanks to a Rubicon grant from the Netherlands Organization for Scientific Research.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.